So this is the end of the official end of the Christmas season. This triple, as the father, early preachers in the church put it, this triple manifestation of Jesus. First at Bethlehem, and then when these pagans came, the wise men, and then finally at his baptism. So for the past 35 years, as most of you know, I have taken Karl Rahner's excellent advice and said that a preacher should be a poet. So I get to read again this wonderful conclusion of W.H. Auden's marvelous poetic drama that, for the time being, is his Easter, his Christmas story. So as you know, everybody gets a voice. The star gets a voice, the wise men, the shepherds, everybody. And there's a narrator who kind of connects everything together. And the narrator finishes the whole thing with these words. Well, so that is that. Now we must dismantle the tree, putting the decorations back into their cardboard boxes, some have got broken, and carrying them up to the attic. The holly and the mistletoe must be taken down and burnt, and the children got ready for school. There are enough leftovers to do, warmed up, for the rest of the week. Not that we have much appetite. Having drunk such a lot, stayed up so late, attempted, quite unsuccessfully, to love all of our relatives. And in general, grossly overestimated our powers. Once again, as in previous years, we have seen the actual vision and fail to do more than entertain it as an agreeable possibility. Once again, we have sent him away, begging, though, to remain his disobedient servant, the promising child who cannot keep his word for long. The Christmas feast is already a fading memory. Already the mind begins to be vaguely aware of an unpleasant whiff of apprehension at the thought of Lent and Good Friday, which cannot, after all, now be very far off. But, for the time being, here we all are back in the moderate Aristotelian city of Darning and the 815, where Euclid's geometry and Newton's mechanics would account for our experience. And the kitchen table exists because I scrub it. Seems to have shrunk during the holidays. The streets are much narrower than we remember. We'd forgotten the office was as depressing as this. To those who have seen the child, however dimly, however incredulously, the time being is, in a sense, the most trying time of all. For the innocent children who whispered so excitedly outside the locked door where they knew the presence to be grew up when it opened. Now, recollecting that moment, we can repress the joy, but the guilt remains conscious, remembering the stable, where for once in our lives, everything became a you and nothing was an it. And craving the sensation, but ignoring the cause, we look around for something, no matter what, to inhibit our self-reflection. And the obvious thing for that purpose would be some great suffering. So once we've met the Son, we're tempted ever after to pray to the Father, lead us into temptation and evil for our sake. They will come all right, don't worry. Probably in a form that we do not expect, and certainly with a force more dreadful than we can imagine. In the meantime, there are bills to be paid, machines to keep in repair, irregular verbs to learn, the time being to redeem from insignificance. The happy morning is over, the night of agony still to come. The time is noon. when the spirit must practice his skills of rejoicing without even a hostile audience. And the soul endures a silence that is neither for nor against her faith that God's will be done. That in spite of all her prayers, God will cheat no one, not even the world of its triumph. And the chorus, which is commented throughout the play, "He is the way, follow him through the land of unlikeness. You will see rare beasts and have unique adventures. He is the truth, seek him in the kingdom of anxiety. You'll come to a great city that has expected your return for years. He is the life. Love him in the world of the flesh. And at your marriage, all its occasions shall dance for joy."